This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. Thank you for joining us at your noon hour. We're with you noon to one every weekday, talking about things that are Salem-Keizer related and have to do with living here, doing business here, playing here in Marion Polk counties and so forth. Lots of topics that affect your lives and your pocketbooks. So thanks for being with us. We've got pretty interesting. I think it's interesting. Of course, I think most everything is interesting. But we got an interesting conversation today. We have a gentleman that's going to be our guest. Is calling in from the Oregon School Activities Association. And this is going to open up a few different conversations. But what prompted it was an op-ed piece authored by him and also by Carissa Niehoff of the National Federation of State High School Associations about parents. Yep, that's you folks. About parents and how that is affecting their ability to provide officials at the high school games. So there are a lot of high school sports, and that requires a lot of officials. And they, if they don't want to do it, then we're kind of messed up, right? We don't have officials to run a game. You can't have a game. I don't think anybody wants one of the parents out there umpiring or refereeing or officiating one of the high school
sports. Talk about bias, right?
So let's determine who's going to be the district champs. Hey, Dad, go out there and cover home plate, would you? Interesting op-ed piece, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity throughout the conversation to learn more about OSAA. I know it's confusing to a lot of us in the community because we disagreed with OSAA's decision to include Central Oregon in our district in some sports and so forth. And that required a little bit of community conversation. So hopefully we learn a little bit about the institution and how it's governed and what Peter Weber, what his role is. Peter, Executive Director of OSAA, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
That's nice of you to be here. I mean, I've read your op-ed piece. And did any of the papers, Oregon papers, pick up this op-ed piece and publish it yet?
You know, we've had some good responses. I think some of the Pamplin papers did. We've had some radio interviews with some other stations, and the response has actually been pretty good so far from the media, you know, just having sent it out yesterday.
Well, for the listener, why don't you give us an idea of the point you're trying to get across?
Well, I think the issue that we're finding, you know, and it's a trend that's happened really for about the last 8 or 9 years, is our declining number of officials. And as we survey, we work with a national group, NASO, the National Association of Sports Officials. They do some surveying of officials. We do some exit surveying of officials. And, you know, I think traditionally people, I know we have thought that things like maybe the pay isn't that great and you know, they can't get off work and things like that have been the main issues. And certainly those are still issues at times, but more and more what we're hearing and the results of some national surveys is the vast majority of officials that choose not to continue, you know, doing that is because of what they feel like, you know, is verbal abuse from adult fans, you know, parents, adult fans, et cetera. And they're really just, you know, fed up with it. They're tired of dealing with it. And we're seeing numbers of officials steadily decline over time to the point now where, you know, we have games obviously being rescheduled, some games being canceled, and just not enough numbers to cover the contests that are out there.
Do you think this is as much of a problem or more of a problem in Oregon as they see in other parts of the states?
I think it varies from state to state. I actually think it varies a little bit sport to sport. You know, depending on if you're at a football game and you're complaining about officials up in the stands, you're kind of removed from the field, and certainly, you know, people may hear you. But when you're at a basketball game, for example, and you're right on top of the court, or at a lower level basketball game, JV or freshman game, you know, where maybe there's not a lot of fans, one person can make a lot of noise and disrupt everything that's going on.
And when you say abuse, are we talking about just insults and such, or foul language, or threats, or what qualifies under that definition?
You know, unfortunately, I think we're talking about all of it. Most of it, I think, are insults, incorrect calls, you know, calling officials out for those types of things. But we've also had situations around the state with threats. We've even had some physical altercations, fans coming out of the stands, confronting officials as they're exiting at halftime or after a game or what have you. You know, so unfortunately, we've seen a little bit of everything in that area.
Interesting. And now, so for full disclosure, so I had children that went through high school and were high school athletes and competed in sports. And also, I have not done high school sports, but I was an umpire for grades up through age 13.
Good for you.
So I've done the training for umpiring, and I coached actually for a dozen years or so. And as I was finishing off my coaching career, I still wanted to be involved in youth sports, and so I took some training and did some work as an umpire, volunteer work, of course. So I've been both sides of it. I've been the parent, I've been the coach, and I have been an official, at least. And thank you, Peter. I'll tell you, I think I had more problems with the attitudes and the capabilities of the coaches than I did the officials in high school. So we'll give you that. Give them that. How about that? What you provided one of these a chart of some of the changes, and I just want the listener to understand. I'm looking at something from about football and how many officials there were, and how over the last 9 years the number of football officials that are available has gone down virtually by 20% in 9 years.
Right. And we've seen that. You know, different sports are a little bit different in those percentages, but they've all declined over time. And again, what we struggle with is trying to replenish those numbers. And certainly the feedback we're getting from officials in terms of the verbal abuse that they believe that they are feeling at contests and things like that is a big factor.
Boy, I could talk about officials for a long time. So, but let's real quickly explain what OSAA is for everyone.
So the OSAA, the Oregon School Activities Association, we're a private nonprofit organization formed by the schools. We're actually celebrating our 100th centennial this year. We were formed in 1918 by the schools and a group of schools at that time. You know, we're running into issues in terms of eligibility and high school students participating against kids who maybe weren't high school students, 20 and 21 year olds, and things like that. And so the group of schools came together and formed the OSAA to try and provide some administration, some regulation to high school activities in the state, and it was kind of born from there. Over time, we've added activities as well. We sanction cheerleading, dance, choir, band, orchestra, speech, and debate. So we offer a wide breadth of activities, and basically working in conjunction with our schools. We have 292 member schools from across the state. We have large schools of 3,000 or 3,200 kids, and we have schools that have 12 or 15 kids in their school spread around, around throughout the state, and trying to work with them. We're obviously working with coaches, athletic directors, administrators, and officials, and trying to provide, memorable life experiences for kids.
Well, you've already surprised me, so I appreciate that. We're talking to Peter Weber, of Executive Director of the Oregon School Activities Association. We know it as OSAA, and I know that we have some Salem Kaiser people here who are unhappy with OSAA and wanted to look into how do we leave OSAA with the decisions of busing football players in the winter over the past to Central Oregon. However, you said it's a private nonprofit formed by the schools to administer all of these different activities over the years, and the breadth of activities that you're doing. So let's dive into that, Peter, and we're going to talk more about the problems we're having recruiting officials and how that is tied to perhaps a bit of over-competitiveness by the parents. So stick with us, Peter. We'll be right back. You're listening to 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne in the KYKN studios. And we want to thank Peter Weber, Executive Director of the Oregon School Activities Association, for joining us today and talking about a problem we have in our high schools, in our high school sports. So, Peter, we were talking about your op-ed piece and how it's titled, My Dear Mom and Dad, Cool It. Because you're having problems with people yelling, screaming, berating officials. And I'm reading actually this right off your op-ed piece. Yelling, screaming, and berating the officials humiliates your child, annoys those sitting around you, embarrasses your child's school, and is the primary reason that Oregon has an alarming shortage of high school officials. So obviously you've seen this decline, and it's increasing. You know, we talked about how number of football officials has gone down by 20% over the last 9 years and so forth. And then you're having a hard time recruiting and getting enough people to work all the games, right?
That's right. No, we've seen that trend over time. And, again, you know, the age of the officials that we do have, you know, obviously they're getting older, and we're just not able to fill it in with the younger generation. And I think it's important to note, too, that we're not looking for parents and adults to come to games and sit on their hands and not cheer and things like that. We want that atmosphere and that camaraderie and those types of things, supporting your students, supporting your school and the community, but just doing it in a positive way. And I think what we've found over time is there's a certain segment of the population that takes it too far, crosses that line, and the impact we're seeing and that's being felt around the state is a lack of officials and people not wanting to come out and face that type of verbal abuse and choosing not to officiate any longer, which, again, then has the impact of not being able to necessarily officiate all the contests. Contests get rescheduled. In some cases, they get canceled, outright, and kids are missing those opportunities.
All right, and you're talking about in op-ed piece that you have officials that are over 60 years old. So some people are older, been doing it a while, and maybe even retired. And then you're trying to recruit people who are potentially even under 30. You got a 25-year-old out there, and they want to start. Is it fair to say that they might be less experienced and more prone to mistakes, but also more sensitive? And then you don't get to retain them for a period of time because they get fed up.
That's right. And you know, the information that we have, again, from exit surveys and talking with officials around the state, if we can get an official in and, you know, coach them up and get them trained and those types of things, get them some experience and hold on to them for 2 or 3 years, typically at that point you have them, and they're going to continue to want to do that, for a longer period of time. But if after a year or two, you know, they're fed up and they decide to do something else, it makes it tough to recover from a number standpoint.
I have a question, Peter. First of all, do you feel that the refs don't have a control on it? They can't eject a parent for doing that? And do you see that the parents are just being really ultra competitive because they want their child to succeed and then eventually go into the sports and make even more money?
Well, I think you see a little bit of both, Dave, to be honest with you, that, it's hard. I think it's difficult. We do have situations where officials will, work with local school administration and eject a fan from a contest. But if an official was ejecting a fan from a contest every time they faced verbal abuse, we wouldn't get through the contest. I mean,
there'd be fans left either.
A number of ejections, right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's it. And it's an interesting question. So my kids participated in Little League, and Little League is a chartered organization, right? And so forth, and there's certain rules and standards.
Sure.
And I tell you, at least in the area of town in which we played, if there was one F-bomb, somebody got ejected.
Yeah.
And it wasn't bad. I wouldn't say it was without blemish, but people were not allowed to do that. Coaches were not allowed to do it. Parents weren't going to do it. That F-bomb would cost you, and you're out.
A few years ago, there was a
competing baseball organization, and it was kind of rampant over there because actually the competing organization kind of attracted the people who were ultra competitive and really, mm-hmm. shall we say, overly invested.
Yeah.
So
different rules to different sports. I get that, but I was at a contest several years ago, and I screamed out, go, go, and people were telling me to calm down. I'm like, what?
No. Yeah, and I think that's that fine line where, screaming in support of your team and the kids out on the floor and those types of things. Those are all things that we want. That's what makes high school athletics and activities so great, that community spirit and sportsmanship that we see. Too often, though, nowadays, we see people taking it too far. And, again, verbal abuse of the officials, in some cases threats, things like that. Certainly, I think we can all agree that fans yelling F-bombs from the stands, there's no tolerance for that. And I think our schools do a great job in working with the officials at a contest to take care of those issues when they arise. Unfortunately, they're happening way too often.
Do school officials actually attend with every sport so that they can help monitor?
Typically, they do. Again, as part of home site administration, especially in the activities that have a number of spectators. In some cases, again, just due to the lack of personnel, you could have lower level games where you may not have a school administrator there, depending on if it's on site at a school or at a local park or something like that. So sometimes there are issues there. We also find situations, and it kind of gets to what we like to refer to as the perfect storm, where you sometimes get the younger officials involved, which is great. They're typically working your lower level games, freshman, JV, JV2, those types of things. You also have your least experienced coaches typically at that level, and also your least experienced players. So sometimes that creates that perfect storm where situations can arise. And we work closely with our local officials associations. Obviously, they're in Salem or Portland or Eugene, other parts of the state. Whenever we can, to try and have those groups pair up a veteran official with a younger official, almost a mentor situation, to try and get that younger official the experience and on board and how to deal with those situations.
Well, that's a good step, but shouldn't every game, at least at home, have a school official there?
Ideally, they would, but again, the reality of having a number of different contests at your school, again, some on-site, some off-site, and strictly personnel numbers, it doesn't always happen.
And we're talking about football, volleyball, soccer, basketball, wrestling, baseball, softball.
True.
So for the administrators, you know, I usually see them, and the ones I have attended, I usually see officials that, other than, obviously, the coaches are quite often you know, school employees and teachers,
yeah,
as well. But they need the backup of an administrator and so forth.
They can't handle
the game and the crowd at the same time.
Yeah, I get that. But a home coach should also be helping.
Yeah, indeed.
Right. And that's something we work with our coaches on. And again, I think by and large, our coaches and our administrators do outstanding work in that area. Of when we talk to kids, and we've added some students to our sportsmanship committee that we work on with administrators and ADs and things, the last couple of years, and when we talk to those students, they really hit home for us about the fact that a coach, home or away, can really set the tone for their crowd. And I think, again, by and large, our coaches do a great job with that, of trying to remain positive. And again, we've all been around sports for a long time. Not every call is going to go your way. Not every call is going to be right. That's just the way it goes. And certainly, you know, on a personal level, I'm no angel in this either. There are times when I go to contests and I'm a competitive person, and you get fired up and in the flow of the game. And I think it's just important for people to remember to put things in perspective, you know, be supportive, you know, in, for the kids in the school that you're rooting for, and keep it positive.
All right. We're talking to Peter Weber, Executive Director of OSAA, and we're going to get to talking about membership in the OSAA. How the Salem Kaiser schools and which ones are members and which are not, and how OSAA has governing authority over them. But right now I'm going to stick on officials, and because we'll also talk about being part of the solution. I mean, because it's going to be parents self-policing, either themselves or the other parents, and it's going to be part of, you know, parents cooling it. But let's talk a little bit about being an official in Salem Kaiser, in Oregon. What kind of training is involved? What kind of pay is involved? What kind of people come out and do it?
Well, fortunately, we have great people that come out and get involved. A lot of them are former participants, some of them former coaches that have a love for that particular sport and want to be involved. They are able to make some money depending on the contest. You know, you can make $50, $60, $70 a contest depending on which sport it is, and you know, give a little back to the game, and then also have the opportunity to have that camaraderie with people who share a common interest, whether it's, you know, football or volleyball or basketball or some of the other ones. You have the opportunity to be around people that, that share those interests. And obviously Salem has a great number of officials. We're always looking for more. We have a website that we have in conjunction with the NFHS, highschoolofficials.com, where people can go on to that website. It's very simple information, name, email, where they live and which sports they might be interested in. And then we put those people directly in touch with the local commissioners of each association, for example, in Salem or Portland. Put them in touch and try and get them registered. They register, there's background checks, there's some training involved, and then we work to try and get those people out on the field and the court.
All right, it's good to know. I know there's some people always wondering, who trained these people? Or I would do it, but I don't feel that comfortable. I don't feel as though I am qualified yet. But at least there are different levels of training for the different sports. I know there's no way I could do basketball. You could train me for 5 years, and there's no way I could officiate basketball.
There is too much going on for me.
That is one of the positives about having an officials population that is getting older. They have a lot of experience, and you know, they're prepared to pass that on to the next generation. We just need to figure out the people in that next generation that want to continue that on.
Peter Weber, do you have an issue or is there a problem with people? They're obviously volunteering in the communities in which they live. Do they also intersect with the high schools and having some level of involvement, or children having gone to McKay, McNary, Salem, North Salem, and Sprague? You know, is there any concerns with being a homie or having a bias?
Certainly there is, and if you're the away team traveling to another school, you certainly have that concern as people are out on the fields and courts. So we have policies in effect regarding conflict of interest that people, you know, are able to say, hey, I graduated from this school a couple of years ago, or my son or daughter goes to school here. And again, the local commissioner is able to work with that and work with the schools and, you know, get them assigned to a different contest or what have you. But again, our people out in the field do a great job of trying to make sure that we minimize that as much as possible, because certainly in the area of officiating, perception is everything.
All right. We're going to come right back and talk about OSAA and how it affected the Mid-Valley and the Greater Valley Conference. Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. We are talking to Peter Weber. Dave and I are talking to Peter Weber, Executive Director of the Oregon Schools Activities Association, OSAA. And he's spending the hour with us, which is great, and we appreciate your time. I know you are busy, and you have quite an organization to run. So you surprised me early in the show. Welcome back, Peter. You still with us?
I am. Thank you.
All right. So OSAA, I want to make sure that the listener understands what you are and what you do and why. And I also want to get to how people can help with the situation you're talking about and some of the things that sometimes I hear people and they're screaming at the radio and they want me to ask this. I don't do Twitter on the show to take, you know, instant questions, but we'll hopefully get to some of those things. So you said OSAA is a private nonprofit and the schools have formed it. And how is it to administer all of these activities now that has grown to things that are outside even the sports realm, into music and speech and debate? Who governs it? Who governs OSAA?
So we have a governance structure, two parts of our governance structure. We have a delegate assembly, which is kind of our representative body that involves one administrator from every league in the state at all levels, 1A through 6A. And we meet with them twice a year, and basically they oversee our constitution and bylaws, including decisions related to parts of the classification and districting, the cutoff points, et cetera, number of leagues, those types of things, and a variety of issues surrounding eligibility, other rules regarding participation, et cetera. And then as a part of that delegate assembly, which currently is 42 members, we have a executive board of 13 with 11 voting members Again, superintendents, principals, athletic directors from around the state. And the executive board serves more in kind of the day-to-day operations, overseeing that. Myself as the executive director, we have a 12-person staff, excuse me, in Wilsonville, and basically overseeing our budget, finances. They have board policies as well. So that's kind of the setup in terms of our governance structure.
All right, so public schools and private schools.
That's correct. We have about 240 or so public schools and about 50 private schools.
And it's voluntary membership?
It is voluntary membership. That's correct.
And are there schools in Salem-Keizer and greater area that are not members?
There occasionally are small schools. We actually have two types of membership. We have a full membership, which is, again, the schools that most of your listeners would be familiar with, the McKay's, McNary, South, Sprague, West, schools like that. And then we also have an associate membership that we began a few years ago for online schools, very small, often private schools that may only have a handful of kids, aren't able to offer their own programs, but would like their students to participate. So we have a mechanism in place, kind of patterned after the homeschool state law, to allow those kids to participate back at their resident public school.
Okay, so I'm sure you're familiar with the fight in the Mid-Valley about busing schools over to Central Oregon, and the school district, I believe, actually sued the OSAA over the decision and did not prevail, right?
Correct. It was part of an appeal process that we have in our rules with the hearings officer, yes.
Okay. What do you think that's going to lead in upcoming years and upcoming decisions? Because extremely unpopular in our community.
Yes, I'm familiar with that. We've heard a lot from the Salem-Keizer community, some from Central Oregon on specific to, you know, the creation of the Mountain Valley Conference. And I think one of the things with regards to classification and districting, we do it every 4 years. There are often changes from one time block to another as we see how things went in the previous time block to determine, you know, what makes sense if schools get larger or smaller and have to move classifications. Obviously, there was a lot of discussion this past time about maintaining six classifications or moving to five classifications, and what would that do by contracting one of the classifications in terms of league setup. So there's a number of different issues. I think, again, our schools, our executive board, our delegate assembly made up of school people from these communities and communities like that around the state, I think understand the issues and concerns. And it's not an easy issue. It's a complex issue with a lot of different moving parts and people trying to make the best decisions that they can, you know, for all 292 schools. And the reality is sometimes that means that some schools face things that they don't want to face and they don't want to have to do in terms of some of the travel and those concerns. And we understand that. It's difficult when trying to put a system in place dealing with all the different interests and what people are trying to do from each of the communities.
Okay, so if the Valley Schools, what would it look like if the Valley Schools wanted to leave the OSAA? What would it look like for Salem-Keizer Schools?
Well, again, at this point, policies with the OSAA state that member schools can only play other member schools. So, for example, you know,
that's
West
another
Salem
reason for people
as,
to be dissatisfied with the
can't
association.
Can't go play a club volleyball team.
Okay.
So, you know, schools that choose not to participate in OSAA are obviously free to do that, but then they wouldn't be able to compete against OSAA member schools.
Okay. And it sounds like, and it's, you know, I try not to be too hostile and shoot the messenger or anything, because you're the executive director and you didn't make the policies, you didn't write the policies, and you're not the one voting, right? But it just seems like it's gotten to a point where the institution that is designed to help administer is now the people telling them what they can and cannot do, the members that created it. So, you know, that's...
But it's the members, the schools are created it, right?
The schools created it, but now they can't leave it and
well,
still
they could.
Have a program.
Well, they could, but they wouldn't be able to play anybody in the OSAA. I see what Peter's saying, though. I mean, you know, you don't want to have a school that's not in the program to be playing other schools in the program.
And why?
That's a good question. Peter, why wouldn't we do that?
Well, again, I think the schools set it up so that we have commonalities in terms of rules, eligibility, transfers, etc. on trying everybody to get together and have some type of level playing ground as much as possible. So having everybody as a member and only playing member schools, you know, that believe in the same things and are working towards the same goals and objectives, I think is important for our membership. Again, the you know, committees that get together and look at these issues and make recommendations are made up of school people from around the state, up and down the valley. You know, they get together, examine the issues, take public input, do their best to try and come up with suggestions and recommendations that make the most sense for the most number of schools as possible, and then pass those on again to our governance structure, the delegate assembly, and the executive board to again try and make the best decisions possible.
Peter brought it up earlier, Brent. You know, the reason that the schools created this was because some schools were recruiting people that weren't even in school, and they were really talented, and they were much older, and they were beating all the other kids, right? That was the main reason, make it a more level playing field for everybody.
Well, I don't mind the administration, and I don't mind, you know, the collaboration. But somewhere there's a line, and it's probably different for a lot of different people. Somewhere there's a line between administration and dictating, right? And when,
But it's the schools. They turn in recommendations.
And now they've created a situation where they can't leave if they want to, right? So it's no longer really voluntary because they can't leave and still have programs and participate in other elements of the state. So anyway, I'll get off that. And Peter, thank you.
That was a big soapbox, by the way.
Yeah, oh, it's a small soapbox. Peter. So Peter, I have, this is Brent, and I have... It connects with the chip I have on my shoulder with the NCAA. Dave. With the NCAA. And when they got into, which should be helping collegiate schools and their athletic departments and so forth. And again, they have their own charter.
Yeah.
But then when they got into the political correctness business and told them what their mascots could and could not be, I thought that was on the other side of the line.
Yeah.
And it's like, you are no longer administrating fairness and equity and so forth in collegiate athletics. You're now doing politics and dictating. You're supposed to be, you know, you have a charter from us, meeting the member schools to do this. And anyway.
Well, Peter, there's...
Hold on to the topic.
Yeah, but there's nothing like in the rules and regulations and bylaws of the OSAA that would allow that, right? I mean, they're not going to get into the political correctness and tell the schools what mascots they can and cannot have, right?
Well, no, we try to avoid those issues as much as possible.
Thank you.
Obviously, when we're working with public schools, ODE has a lot of authority over what goes on in those schools and have delved into a little bit of the mascot issue. But again, we work for the schools and the directions that they want to go. And certainly we have current rules in place and they often get changed. And if schools want to see those things change, whether it's a membership policy or a transfer policy or an eligibility policy, we have systems in place to do that, and you know, from year to year we do make a number of tweaks to rules and policies at the behest of schools.
Yeah, keeping it up with the times.
Yeah. Just before the show I talked to my son who did play high school athletics, and he said, I liked going to Redmond. So
because he wants to play a different team, right?
No, it was just I think you get out of school
or
for
get
a
out of town.
You know, it was a different environment, the road trip, whatever it was. I liked going to Redmond.
Yeah, away games are fun, Brent. Come on, where's your camaraderie?
In the snow.
Yeah, all right, let's take a break.
All right, we're going to take a break. Come back. We're going to talk more about officials and how to sign up, how they get recruited, how they get trained, and how to be a part of the solution instead of the problem. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Julie Hoy with Geppetto's Italian Restaurant here in Salem. We've been cooking up Chicago-style Italian food in this location since 1974. Our dedicated staff works hard to ensure that the original recipes of this Salem treasure continue. Come on in and enjoy a home-style meal in a relaxed and comfortable environment. And if you don't feel like leaving the house, we deliver, whether dinner for one or a feast for the entire family or office. Give us a call, 503-378-1271, or visit us at geppettosalem.com.
Sweet Dog Days is the perfect place to send your pooch for a day or a vacation. Lisa and her staff of dog-loving attendants will make sure that your pet is well-fed and cared for. Plus, there will be other pets there waiting to play. Go to DoggyDaycareSalem.com. That's DoggyDaycareSalem.com. Hundreds of pet owners rave about the care their pets receive at Sweet Dog Days. They can even watch their pet on closed-circuit TV while they're away. No matter how long the stay, make sure it's at Sweet Dog Days.
Are you a penny pincher? Well, that's a good thing, especially if you're into playing bingo, because Friday, January 25th, this is your day. It's the B&G Bingo Penny Pinchers event during their evening session. Five early games pay up to $300. $1 regulars pay $150. Five blackout games paying up to $1,199. Plus, the proceeds go to support your local Boys and Girls Clubs of Salem, Marion, and Polk County. So, count your pennies and get to B&G Bingo's Penny Pincher event Friday, January 25th at B&G Bingo in Salem, off Highway 22 and Lancaster Drive next to Winco.
Coming up this Sunday, January 20th, People's Church is pleased to welcome internationally renowned speaker and author, Dr. Marilyn Hickey. Feel free to join us and enjoy an encouraging word at one of four Sunday gatherings, in the morning at 8:30, 10, or 11:30, and in the evening at 6. People's Church is located at 4500 Lancaster Drive Northeast in Salem. Be sure to visit us at peopleschurch.com.
Baby, it's cold outside.
That's what a weak battery in your vehicle is saying in winter months. The professionals of Batteries Northwest advise that a weak battery causes damage to other vehicle components. Have your battery checked for free at Batteries Northwest on the corner of Pine and Portland Road, or call for a dealer near you. In a couple of minutes, they can tell you if you're about to have a problem. If so, they can replace it on the spot for a very good price. When you hear this,
baby, it's cold outside.
Go to batteriesnorthwest.com for contact information.
Hi there, John and Debbie here from State Street Saw Shop.
Have you heard about Steel's exciting new line of lightning battery systems? Like the Steel BGA56 handheld blower, including battery and charger for $199.95.
Come in and check out our full line of outdoor power products and get your equipment serviced by our factory certified master technicians.
State Street Saw Shop is open 7 days a week for your convenience.
Visit us at our family owned and operated store at 4067 State Street or on the web at statestreetsaw.com.
State Street Saw Shop, your elite steel dealer in Salem.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we've got Peter Weber, Executive Director of OSAA, Oregon School Activities Association, as our guest. And thank you for joining us this whole hour, Peter. You've been very patient and even tolerated the chip off of my shoulder. That's very nice.
Big chip. So,
I appreciate you guys having me on. It's good conversation.
All during the break, Dave's been making fun of me and my attitude.
I've been defending you, Peter.
Peter doesn't need offended. He's a professional, and two, you know, these things that I have complaints about, and yeah, actually Salem Kaiser communities have complaints about, were not Peter's decision.
That's true.
Were they, Peter? They weren't Peter's decision. Okay. he doesn't hold the gavel that determines all these things. He's got a governing board. But prompting the conversation today was the concern that we're losing high school sports officials. We're losing them in numbers, and the younger people only staying a year or two and not wanting to take the abuse.
Yeah. So what is the solution, Peter? What do you think?
Well, again, you know, I think there's a couple of different fronts that we're trying to focus on. I don't know that there's one, you know, silver bullet, golden solution that's going to take place. You know, certainly awareness is one thing, and trying to make sure that the public is aware of how they can get involved. You know, again, going to highschoolofficials.com. If there's interest in signing up, we can put people in touch with their local association. So creating that awareness that we need officials and how to get involved is one step. On the other side, we're also working directly with schools. I mentioned our sportsmanship committee earlier. We're trying to do work there and really spell out very clearly and improve some of our communication with schools about the expectations that we have when you're hosting a contest in terms of the home game management, working both with the officials, working with the crowds, certainly working with our coaches association, and trying to see what we can do to improve, you know, on the court, on the field behavior from all involved.
All right, let's talk a little bit then about recruiting. And so obviously we already talked, it's going that you have an association in each region or area that will train for that sport, and hopefully you can match them up with a mentor or someone who has some experience, and it pays, right? This is something that someone can do on the side and do three contests a week and put in $150 to $200 in their pocket.
That's exactly right. And yeah, again, it's a way to make some money. They can get involved with something that they like to do. You know, maybe they were a former participant or coach, and give a little bit back to the sport. Each association, again, you know, for example, in Salem, whether it's Salem football or volleyball or basketball or baseball, softball, things like that, they have regular meetings during the season with training opportunities. Again, opportunities for that camaraderie amongst officials, getting together, new rules, issues that have come up, and how they can best address those. And so there's really kind of that community and family feel to it in our associations. And again, it's an opportunity. I think some people do it as an opportunity to stay in shape too. There's good exercise running up and down a soccer field or basketball court or what have you, and getting involved.
Yeah, I think I'd have to be a home plate umpire. So who does that official work for?
So the officials are local. The local associations, they're contractors, so they're not hired by the schools as employees. They're not hired by the OSA. They're in a contractor status, working with the local officials associations. Again, I mentioned earlier, we people are interested. We get them registered. They get rule books. There's training. There's testing. There's background checks, and then working with, again, hopefully that veteran official and trying to get them out on the court in the field and get that experience, and hopefully they like it and enjoy it and can continue on into the future.
And the uniform, sometimes there's equipment or uniform, sometimes it's just a whistle, right, and some shorts and a shirt, but
just a whistle
provided by schools, or does somebody need to pick up that on their own?
Yeah, so typically the official would pick that up on their own, although again, as we've tried to work with officials associations to ramp up recruitment and in some cases retention efforts, a lot of officials associations, because they have so many veteran officials that they might have, gear and shirts and shoes and things like that, a lot of the associations have the opportunity for those younger officials to help them out to get started. Honestly, that can be a difficulty. If you're going to be a baseball or softball official, it might take a couple $100 for you to get the equipment that you need to do it. Sometimes that can be a deterrent. So we're working with local associations to try and help alleviate those concerns and those costs where we can.
All right. I know I can think of, off the top of my head, some people that I know who were very involved in their kids' sports growing up who would be very knowledgeable and be good at this, especially the kids get out of high school and they're no longer...
Highschoolcoaches.org, is that right?
Yeah. Highschoolofficials.com is the
com.
Website.
Okay.
Highschoolofficials.com. And for a younger person, heck... $200 a week if you're going to work after work and do these things. That is like paying your rent for the whole month if you're doing it in season.
There's a lot of good opportunities there. We often in the different local associations around the state, we try and partner up with the local university or community college and see if there are students that are interested. Again, maybe they were participants and there's a way for them to get involved and, as you said, earn a little money and have a great time doing it.
All right, so I got to ask this. Occasionally, you must have an official that doesn't have the aptitude or doesn't have the attitude that they should be in this role. And how does that get policed, and how do they get weeded out?
Again, that's done through the local associations. As I mentioned, we do things like background checks and things at the start, but sometimes, people, as you mentioned, do get into it. And it's not for them for whatever reason. It's not a good fit. And again, our local associations work oftentimes with the schools on that. And if there's a situation that arises, again, that's where you can have that mentorship and try and bring that person along. And if you get to a point where it's just not happening, then maybe it's better to part ways and come up with something else.
Does that end up to the schools to say, hey,
this ref is having a problem?
Yeah, because you and I, everybody else that's ever watched sports, we've seen officials that are in it for the wrong reasons. They're not in for the love of the game. They're not in for it for mentoring the kids. They're not into it to get the exercise. They're into it for a power trip or, just
control.
Some sort of identity and control, right? So... That's my question is sometimes Not to say, I'm not trying to diminish your point of your op-ed piece whatsoever. Parents are a problem when they get too overly invested and, you know, it's
overzealous. I like that one, yeah.
And then it's life and death, and it's whether or not his kid's going to play at Penn State, you know, yeah, and right. All these things. But, it, you know, there's a flip side, and just want the listener to understand that it probably is not, it sounds like it's not OSAA's role, but possibly the local association or the local schools. Which one?
Yeah, I think everybody working together in those situations, and our schools have great relationships with their local officials associations in each sport. And if an issue arises, just like if an issue arose with a coach, the officials association would be working with the school and sometimes the OSAA in that instance. If there's a situation with an official, then the school, the official association, and sometimes us get involved and try and work through that for a good outcome.
All right, that sounds good. It sounds like a good call for more volunteers, because the fewer people out there willing to officiate means the smaller pool of talented people, you know.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to settle for what we get.
What's the percentage?
To get the games played.
What's the percentage that you've had to cancel or reschedule real quick?
Well, it varies by sport. Certainly, we saw this year more often than we've ever seen in the past. Even things like Friday Night Football sometimes having to take place on Thursday or Saturday in areas around the state because there just weren't enough people. So, again, we try to attack that in a couple of different ways, too, with working with schools that just because you've always played soccer on Tuesday and Thursday doesn't mean there's always going to be officials on Tuesdays and Thursdays anymore. You might need to adjust scheduling. So we see it on the increase in terms of postponements and, unfortunately, some cancellations. Mm-hmm. The cancellations, I think, are pretty small, but we see a lot of postponements and rescheduling. Especially at the sub-varsity
right.
level,
we got to go, Peter.
Trying to come up with numbers.
Thank you for being with us, Peter Weber, Executive Director of OSAA. Thank you for joining us on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN.
This has
Salem's
been
listening.
Wind Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.